From an early age, we're all immersed in sport. For some, it fails to ignite a spark inside us, but for those of us who catch the fire, it's the beginning of a lifelong journey filled with highs and lows, which all matter far more than they should. After all, it's just a game, we're told. Sport is a certainty, it's a point of reference in an increasingly uncertain world, and the bonds formed with either sport in general or a hometown club transcend both time and generations. Today, much of what sport has always meant to true fans has been somehow lost in a blizzard of corporate communications, fireworks and froth. The attachments that were once so strong seem more trivial in the global age of televised sport as entertainment. What was once authentic has become increasingly staged. In this podcast, we'll get back to the things that sport has always meant to true fans. We'll take you from the boardroom to the dressing room to the pitch, but we'll do it not as a corporate communication, but as true fans of sport, and we'll do it with authenticity. We'll be honest and we'll speak our minds. This is a podcast for true sports fans, and the one thing all fans have in common is a passion for the game. Now, we certainly don't mean to cause any offence, so if you find yourself taking any, just shrug it off and get back in the game, because this is about the game, and the game is bigger than all of us.
We've got some fresh new young talent doing some things that I know you haven't heard before.
Listen. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Are You Not Entertained? I'm joining you from a hotel room in New York City, but hopefully in a slightly warmer, sunnier and more picturesque place is Roger Mitchell. Roger, come in.
Yeah, hi, Grant. It is full spring here in Como.
Full spring in Como, yeah, as in the lake.
As in the lake, and so much so that I'm full of my antihistamines and all that kind of
thing. Excellent.
Yeah, so like my eyes are like swelling, but you know,
jeez.
Your hotel room in New York, I hope it's a nice hotel.
Yeah, no, it's okay. It's all right. It's all right. No complaints. You should see some of the places I've stayed when I've been on the road, Rog. This is a luxury compared to those, believe me. So plenty going on this week, Rog.
Absolutely. Lots to talk about. It's just you and me this week, so we've got we've got a lot to fill out with because it's been a good week.
We do. Well, I'm going to let you kick off with either a goal or an own goal. What do you got for us?
Well, I'm going to kick off with a mini goal to then pass the ball over to you.
Mini goal.
Yeah, it's only a mini goal because I saw this clip on Twitter during the week that I had to like mention. It's this. I don't even think it's that recent, but maybe it is. It's this kid at a baseball ground, and he's in the bleachers, and one of the players throws the ball to him. And this kid's about nine years old, and he catches the ball and then looks round and there's three babes beside him, and he gives the ball to the prettiest one and she smiles, and you think, well, you know, that's pretty cool, you know,
swoons,
a guy that age understands.
And swoons. I saw
it. Yeah, and swoons. And you know, you think he's understood how the world works already. But the really amazing thing is that he swaps balls. You know, I don't know if you saw that, Grant.
I didn't see that.
Well, go and look again. The ball that comes from the player, which obviously will have a value, he keeps in the glove and gives her one in his pocket.
That is genius.
So go and have a look at the clip and look at the comments underneath, and you will pass 10 very funny moments, because it's brilliant. The guy's nine and like he's understood everything, because of the three girls he gives it to the prettiest one. You know, it's like one of the comments underneath, you know, this guy's going to be a CEO of a Fortune 500 company.
I saw it three or four times, but I hadn't noticed.
Have a
the
look.
Ball switch, so that's great. I did also notice that he actually looked like he caught the ball without even looking at it. It looked like he just kind of threw his glove at her. And either way, it was fantastic.
That's my mini goal. It's not my main one.
God bless him. Destined for great things, that lad, no doubt. Well, I'll kick off with the goal. I know you've got a whole bunch of stuff up your sleeve, so I'm going to keep mine short and sweet, and we can talk a lot about your stuff. But my goal for the week is the Champions League, and more importantly, being a proud Englishman, the fact that there's four English clubs in the last eight, which is just fantastic. The draw means that at least one of them's going out in the next round, but But great to see, not just the fact that there are four English clubs in the last eight, but the way they got there. I mean, Man City demolished Schalke. You know, Liverpool, tremendous result against Bayern. You know, it's and Spurs again. You know, beating Borussia Dortmund, just fantastic stuff. And even Man United, you know, pulling one out the fire, and to be rewarded with a game against Barcelona. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens from here. But it is great as an Englishman to see four teams in the last day. You maybe not quite so enamoured with it.
No. I mean, it may come back to what you think about it and why you think this is happening. I actually, I'm very much a meritocracy guy in all of these things, and being English or not doesn't really matter because, you know, really they're English in name only at this point.
Yeah, that's true.
But you know, there was a couple of things that I thought about after this Champions League week. I did notice the four English teams, and I noticed, you know, the authority and the confidence that they went to away from home and did that, you know, because that's not usually a British thing to do so much. So that was very, 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 very positive. The thing that I would mention, which you'll understand because I go on about it all the time, is that we've got Ajax and Porto in there as well.
Yes, we do.
And, you know, when I've been very critical of my own team, Celtic, because people say, well, we don't have the money, we can't aspire to this, and we have to accept our lot. You know, I've never bought that line, and I've taken a lot of heat for that. And then you see Ajax go there and demolish them. Porto did the same with Roma. You know, so I thought it was an excellent, excellent last 16 of the Champions League. There's a couple other things I'd like to link to that and get your view on, Grant. Foden, you know I like Foden.
Yeah, you do. Yes, I know.
Bloody hell,
big fans.
I mean, geez, you know, he's exactly my kind of player. You know, the straight back, you know, the head up. I think he's got the lot. Absolutely got the lot.
Yeah, no, I do. I'm with you on that, Roger. We've spoken about him at length before, and I know we're both big fans, but you can see him coming of age, which is great. It's great that he's been given these chances in these big games.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to talk about, well, one of the other ones was Spurs, because, you know, in the week that they go through against Dortmund, there was an incredible article, and I think it was The Guardian, I may be wrong, it was certainly the broadsheet, that talked about Spurs's, it's what we talked about with Murray Barnett, that Spurs haven't got the bottle, haven't got the metal to handle what's happening when the pressure comes on. And obviously the article is referring to their bad patch in the Premiership. So, you know, Spurs, I think, are a strange team because I didn't expect them to do that against Dortmund. I think the first leg flattered them a little bit, you know, but I think over the two legs they deserve to go through, and that shows that they're an excellent team, especially when they had, you know, certainly Dele Alli and Kane not always available in this period. But in the Premiership, you know, they seem to have that DNA, and this is what this article was speaking about. You know, is there some teams that are born winners and some teams that are just always going to flatter to deceive? Spurs, I can't work out, mate.
Yeah, look, I mean, they're interesting, aren't they? And I think this question mark is going to hang over them until they win something. And it really kind of doesn't matter what it is, but they need to win something because they're ticking all the boxes, playing great football. They've got, you know, big name players who have become global stars now in the likes of Kane and Ali, but they can't win anything. And so until they do, it doesn't really matter, frankly. They've had such a sort of barren patch for two, three decades now, really, that they need a trophy. And, you know, I think Pochettino's the guy to give it to them if he sticks around long enough. I think there's going to be a lot of clubs that want him. It depends whether he really wants to finish this journey he started and bring him a trophy. But, you know, I enjoy watching Spurs play, but I get it. And until they put some silverware in what's a very dusty trophy cabinet, I just think the question marks are going to stay around them.
Well, you know, it's funny because I look at when teams come up and you look at their team sheet and you get a view internally about what you think about them. Spurs never ever convince me, you know, when you see the graphic come up and it's the back four and you think, oh my God, you know, I always, my way of looking at football is always to say, you're going to have ups and downs. So it's your defence that's going to carry you through when you're in a down period. Yeah. And that's the same for Arsenal. We talked about this with Colin, the whole thing about defence and everything like that. I just don't think they've got the defence for it. And that's why I think they're inconsistent, because when Kane and some of their creative players are on song, to, if you excuse the pun, they do well. And when they aren't, then I don't think the defence can win ugly, as they say. So, you know, it's a strange team for me. And it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next round.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, Man City's a tough place to play. But you know, last time they got to the stage where it was the semis, I think, and when Liverpool dumped Man City out of the cup, when they looked for all the world like they were going to be unbeatable. You know, Spurs are one of those teams, though, Roger. Even if it's over two legs, I mean, I still think they've got a chance. I think it's either going to be another Man City demolition, or Spurs are going to sneak it. You know, I don't think it's going to be a sort of 2 or 3 goal aggregate win for City. I think they're going to demolish them, or it'll be tight, and I think Spurs will beat them, because there's so much pressure and expectation at I was going to say Main Road, and that dates me a bit.
It's still Main Road. In your heart, it's still Main Road for all of us.
Yeah, the Etihad. Yeah. The Etihad. It's, there's so much pressure on them there. So, yeah, I don't know. It's. I'm looking forward to that one, actually.
Yeah, I strongly favour Man City. I think I'm a great believer in this, that peaking at the right time, whether it's in other sports or athletics, and certainly football. This is when, you know, they always said, you know, Easter time is the time that I think it's now with the Champions League. It's from March to the end of May that decides, and you need to, you know, have your team ready at this point. And I think Man City are just, you know, going up the gears now. I think they'll win both the Premiership and the Champions League.
Yeah, if they've certainly paid their dues in the Champions League. I mean, they really have. They've got the feeling of a team that's ready to win it now after all these near misses. So, yeah, I mean, they'd probably be my favourites. But we'll see. It's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, well, listen, here's a link into that a little bit, because you started it with, rightly so, a bit of pride about English football. I want to link this to all these fan invasions, fan attacks we've seen in the last week.
Yeah.
Both sides of the border, by the way. It's not just an English thing.
I'd like to, just so you know, that was the obvious own goal, and I left it because I knew we'd be talking about it anyway, so I had to come up with another one.
It was one of my reserve ones, but it's a nice like segue, you know, because it's funny, English football is clearly, you know, 4 out of 8 is fantastic in anybody's language, but this is the other side about what's going wrong a little bit. And I don't know, is it a symptom of people being so angry because social media is like ranking everybody, you know, they're revving them up to the hill, and then they go on to the stadium and they feel as if in some way they're still in a Twitter exchange. You know, do you know what I mean? I think people are much more angry than they were 20 years ago, Grant.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that, me included, frankly. But, I think you're right. It's just, I don't know, Roger. I don't think you can drop the blame for this at the doors of social media. I just think it's one of those things that kind of incident is always lurking there, and it takes a flare up to make everybody realise that we're always that one lunatic away from something like this happening. And I think every now and then you need these flare-ups, not in that way, but you need them to remind people that, you know, this is what can happen. I mean, I think Birmingham will get rightly punished. Hopefully the FA will throw the book at them. Not because it's necessarily the club's fault. There's no legislating for random lunatics. How he got past the security guards, though, I don't know. That's something that needs to be looked at. But you need it as a deterrent, because hopefully the next time the fans will grab the guy and stop him coming on the pitch.
Well, you know, that's you getting into what's called, certainly north of the border, strict liability. And I've been asked a couple of times this week by people to comment on that for the media up there, because I was in charge when there was one of these very big incidents in May the 2nd, 1999, where we went through all of this, the inquiry, the QC-led investigation, and you compare that to the rule book and what's expected of clubs and what they do and what they don't do. And this isn't simple. You know, to tell
no,
you the truth.
No, absolutely not.
What, you know, like, if you look at that game all those years ago, 20 years ago, referee was hit with a coin, pitch invasion, everything like that. What did we punish Celtic for, the home crowd? Because in the team talk, they hadn't been able, they hadn't said to the players that they had an obligation towards fan safety, which is some kind of like minor...
That's ridiculous.
Well, because you know what, Grant, and I don't think I've ever said this before, we couldn't get them on anything else, you know? And so...
But hang on, Rob, but here's the thing, right? It shouldn't be about the association trying to get them on something. The club should willingly submit to someone like this and say, look, let's come up with something. It's about ultimately.
Grant, and unless you put fences round, they can't do anything. You know,
right.
You know, but I don't think any of us want to put fences round. So the realpolitique of this is, as you said at the start, let's hope Birmingham get hammered because that's what public opinion wants. People that were in my job now, they know that there's nothing you can really do, but the public wants people, they're outraged and they want an answer, and they come out with things like strict liability. But if you really go down that route, you've got fences, because there is nothing you can do in a stadium of 60,000. If some guy decides he's going to have a go at it and go on the pitch, there's very little you can do.
Well, it's the same but different as all the racist chanting, right? The club can't stop people singing things. All they can do is, if they catch them on CCTV, is ban them from the ground. It's all retroactive, and quite rightly so. And for this, you know, the guy they know is obviously he needs to get banned from the ground for life.
Yeah, that's easy. Yeah,
and I'm sure he will. Right, that's a very simple one. But it really is, how do you create a situation where other fans do the policing for you? And it really is by, unfortunately, making them suffer to the point where, you know, they don't want to miss five games behind closed doors.
Yeah, so you're saying make it as draconian as possible. So it's self-policed by the fans.
Yeah.
If they see a guy, you know, making his way towards it, they'll rugby tackle him down because they don't want to have points docked.
Or your mates will stop you. Yeah, whatever. It needs to be
That is the argument.
Of course it is.
But I'm not convinced, Grant.
Well, I'm not convinced because it never works out the way it should, Roger. But it was.
But that's what you would do. If you were in the job, you would say, look, you know, to the clubs, you, by the way, your members, your shareholders, you would say to them, right, it's now strict liability. Any of you do that, nothing's off the table. Points deductions, you could be going into the last five games of the season, 6 points ahead, but this happens, I'm going to dock you 10. So I think that's tough. I think it's really tough. And then there's the argument that, you know, the opposition could plant an imposter to do this. And I've got
this day and age, no one's, if you're a Villa fan masquerading as a Birmingham fan, there is no way in the age of social media you can pretend that's coming out. So I don't think that's so much of an issue.
All right, okay. So that's your position. I think that's a fair position. I think it's very complex. And,
oh, of course it is.
And I don't want fences back because, you know, football does that. It's sledgehammer to crack a nut. These things don't happen that often. They do happen, but it's not that often considering that, you know, you're dealing with major events of mass participation across the country every weekend. It's not that often. And I just don't want football to overreact, I guess.
No, I agree, but I think they're... Look, we all know that the punishment that gets offered is going to get argued and it'll probably end up in court if it's really severe. But they need to set their stall out and make their first pass at it. Even if it's with the clubs, basically, look, here's where we're going to start off and here's where we're going to finish, but this argument needs to be held in the public eye. So we're going to sting you with whatever, a 10-point deduction, or you know, you play five games behind it, whatever it is. Here's where we're going to start. We will compromise, but we need this argument to play out in public so that we can have the dialogue about why we're doing it and why it's important, et cetera, with all the fans listening. It can't be a deal done behind closed doors, because then you don't realise that the jeopardy involved by making these mistakes again.
Mm. Good point.
The two good things to come out of it were, one, you know, fair play to Grealish for staying on the score and the winning goal. You know, that was pretty impressive. But I don't know if you saw on Twitter, the camera that zoomed in on his face when he was sat on the floor after he'd been clumped, and thankfully he wasn't hurt. But the tweet said, the most Brummy response ever. And you could see the way his mouth moves. He was saying, bloody hell. It was so Birmingham. It was fantastic. That was the one thing about the whole situation that gave me a good chuckle.
Yeah. All right, so
My own goal of the week is directed squarely at the at the chairman of Oldham, Abdullah Lemsagam, I think is that, I may be pronouncing that wrong, I apologise if I am, but Paul Scholes resigned after 40 odd days. I think he played seven matches with the team and 31 days, I think it was, less than Cluffy famously when he left Leeds, but you know, the results hadn't been good. I think he'd won one game and lost four and drawn a couple. And the club were languishing. But the own goal for me is the chairman. A, for letting Scholes go. And B, for getting into it and saying that Scholes is lying. Because there is no more beloved English footballer than Paul Scholes. I mean, he's the gold standard as far as I'm concerned. No, I've never heard anybody say a bad thing about him. Never say anybody say they didn't like him. You know, Beckham was a bigger star, but there were plenty of people that didn't like Beckham.
Yeah.
But for this guy to get into it and start calling Scholes a liar, I mean, there is absolutely no way that's going to do him any good whatsoever. I just can't see anybody saying, you know what, I believe the chairman of Oldham. I think Paul Scholes has shown throughout his career that he can't be trusted and he's a nasty guy out for himself. And I mean, it's just utter nonsense. Yeah. So it's a shame that he's gone. But hopefully, you know, I think Solskjaer has already offered him a chat round at Man United. So, you know, hopefully for Scholes it'll work out and he'll be, frankly, where he belongs on the coaching staff at Old Trafford.
Yeah, I thought about putting this one in because I was going to come at it from a slightly different angle, Grant. You know, like when you hear what he's complained about Scholes, that this guy, who, by the way, is some ex-player agent or something like that, or he used to be involved.
You love this guy.
Yeah. And his mate even worse. And, you know, Paul Scholes, did you not see this coming? You know,
well, yes, I'm sure.
Listen, all of us have when we're thinking about changing a job or taking a career change or whatever, you put a lot of due diligence into it, Grant. You know, like, Paul Scholes had a good job as a pundit. You're offered Oldham. You know, where's his mates to say, look, regardless of what your contract says, these guys are going to behave exactly like this. Exactly.
Well, apparently, that's exactly what his mate said. But look, you know, the punditry is not a problem. You know, he knows he can walk straight back into punditry. This is not going to affect his punditry viability at all. And B, I think it's a local team to where he grew up, and he just had that feeling that, you know what, maybe I'm the guy to turn this around. I know it's a risk.
It's an error. But, you know, that's very naive.
I'm not saying it's not, but I think when it's gone wrong, the owner has doubled down and tried to make Scholes the bad guy. And I think that is such a catastrophic error of judgment on his part, because it's just not going to work.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, I don't think they've got a lot to lose in terms of reputation, these guys and their ilk. But Paul Scholes does, you know, like, I think he aspired to have a coaching career. And I remember when he was appointed, everybody was saying, isn't it wonderful he's going down to that level rather than do what Lampard and Stevie Gerrard have done and go to bigger clubs because he's a proper guy. And then, you know, he's handing in his resignation by text a month later. I don't think that does him any favours. I think that's a big error from him.
We'll see. I think he's going to escape with this one. I really do.
All right. Okay, so listen, in terms of goal this week, I'm going to put an umbrella on it and have two or three examples of what I'm calling the goal of the magnificent chaos that is Italian football.
Right.
Now, I don't often speak about Italian football, even though I live here, because my one eye is always on Scotland and Celtic and one eye is on the business side. But I have to laugh, Grant, and I'm going to take you through some examples this week alone. And in the context is, you know, we're talking about things that perhaps in the grand scheme of things are, as you say, chip paper tomorrow. In Italy, they wouldn't even make the chip paper because there is so much richness in the soap opera here. So the week starts with a game of under-15s in Bari, where the young aspiring referee, aged 19, gives a late penalty to one of the teams and then is attacked by all of that team, remember they're 15, and their fathers. So much.
Wait, how old was the referee?
19. He's a boy. So he gives the penalty to kids that are 4 years younger than him. They don't like the last minute penalty decision and they start chasing him around the field. And his escape is blocked by the parents of these boys who have descended from the stands and give him a good kicking. He's in hospital for 10 days.
Oh, jeez.
Now, in Italy, this is kind of like just blown over as, you know, it's kind of inevitable. And by the way, it is, because I have to say that, you know, at that level of amateur football where, you know, nobody's going to make it, but, you know, everybody's passionate. You know, I've been involved in some altercations myself in the stand with their parents. It's just inevitable. But, you know, in Italy, fan invasions and violence, they just take it to another level.
Yeah, right.
So that's the first one.
I don't know what to say about
that. That kicks off the week. The second one comes back to the Champions League, where you've got Juventus. Different, I would suggest, to Spurs. That Juventus have not got any emotion at all in their DNA. It's just win or move over, please. So after the first leg, where Allegri gets beat 2-0 by Atletico, despite having won, what is it, four or five championships in a row, after one game, he's in a kind of like win or get out situation. And that's where he was in the return leg against Atletico. And obviously, he pulls it off. Great performance. But the thing that I loved, I don't know whether you saw it, you may have been watching another game, was at a certain point, you know, the ball comes out of the park and it's right beside the dugout. And he moves to it beautifully. He's a little bit like Foden as a player, tall, straight back. and he was a good player, Allegri. And he does this cushion control with the outside of his foot to give it enough power to just bounce into whoever was taking the throw-in. I mean, it was a piece of very sophisticated technique. And I just love that. I just love that kind of stuff, Grant. And he was under pressure at that moment. So that's why I thought that was very nice. And of course, the whole thing
Rog, you know what it's like walking. You're walking through the park and there's a bunch of guys playing football. The ball comes over to you. We all try and do a little couple of keefies up just to let them know that, you know what? Yeah, I used to be a player back in the day.
Yeah, but we weren't. But that touch to leave the weight on it that it needed to have on it. It was a very, very difficult piece of skill.
You talk about that, and you talked about the Baggio over the shoulder.
Yeah.
Once from the keeper. I was reminded this week, someone put up the clip of Zidane when the keeper threw the ball to him. I think he was playing for France, I remember. Just over the halfway line, and he just takes it, flips it one touch on the sort of half volley, but back between his legs and leaves the guy for dead. It was just beautiful. Magnificent. I mean, I remember seeing it at the time, but I'd forgotten about it until I saw it again. I said, oh my God, that was sublime.
Yeah, it was. So like my third one is Naples, and their very, very flamboyant owner, De Laurentiis, who comes from the cinema business, famously volatile, almost bordering and bipolar.
Is it the Italian in him or the thespian?
He's not a lovey. He's just crazy. He is crazy. So we'll come back to this a little bit about stadia and everything like that. But obviously in Italy, the stadia are often owned by almost always owned by the local council, not by the club. So anytime you want to move stadium or you want to change it, as your friend Jim Palotta is finding out at Rome, by the way, great interview on Real Vision with Jim. It was fantastic. It's difficult. You get involved with politics. So De Laurentiis has been asking to change stadium for a while, and in Naples, that's never going to be easy. Never going to be easy. Real estate and Naples is never going to be easy. So yeah, he's got a meeting with the mayor And this is reported almost verbatim. It's in Italian, so I can't do it verbatim. But basically, it's in the paper verbatim. So the order, agenda order, is they talk about tarting up San Paolo, the existing stadium, and changing the colour of the seats, because Naples often is a ground that is not full, especially the lower rings, which are right in the line of the television camera. So the ground for the TV audience looks empty. So De Laurentiis is correct. He's saying, look, we need to do something here. And his idea is that they put in coloured seats so that it looks as if it's people. You know, they've done it in Udinese, they've done it in different places. You know, it's a technique now. You put in coloured seats and it looks as if the ground's always full. And so he says this in the meeting, and the mayor or whoever the guy in charge of this particular thing says, Napoli plays here, it has to be light blue. This is our team. And he says, but don't you understand that the stadium looks empty? And this goes on, and the guy's not having it. And then the guy in the mayor's office comes out with this classic line. He says, listen, if you bought any decent players, it would be a moot point because the stadium would be full. And he apparently got up in the meeting and all the bad words, city, that he's thrown, see your assholes, everything. I mean, like in the middle of a public meeting like this, and accused the guy. He said, where are you from? The guy said he was from a town called Barra, which he said, well, that explains everything. That means you're a Camorrista, which is Camorra, you know, like it's the Italian mafia. So this goes on for a while, and then apparently they had to be broken up physically and the meeting was adjourned. But there you go. That's the reality of Naples trying to build a new stadium. All these things you hear about, you know, smart stadium and how they have to be. This is the reality of it, dealing with politics in it too.
All these stadium projects, I mean, they're so big now and there's so much money involved that, let's face it, it's impossible for one of these stadiums to get built without there being all sorts of backhanders. And I mean, it's just a nightmare.
No, that's what happened to Palotta, of course. He thought he had it done and then it all kind of fell apart. Last thing on Italy is a slightly nicer story. I was doing a little bit of work this week for the guy that owns the group Y Scout, Y Lab. He also owns a football team called Intella. He's made a lot of money in business before that. And I was helping him in various things. And he was telling me about last year when he got relegated from the second to the third division, which was fair enough. He got relegated, but however, at the end of that season, many of the clubs that remained in the second division were penalised for various breaches, including falsifying their accounts, false invoices, money laundering, mafia money. And there were three or four clubs that were docked points, which should have meant that he'd stayed up, because once they had their points docked, he was no longer he was no longer in the relegation area. And in classic Italian fashion, not a lot happened over the summer, and he remained in the third division. But he went through the appeals process, so his team didn't play any football until November of this year. So their season started in November. The clubs that he complains about, which are Foggia, Chievo Verona, Cesena, they have had their points penalty applied to this season in Serie B, which is ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. And he was telling me, you know, everything that went on in the back rooms of all of these kind of like situations. The good news is, even having started the season in November, it looks like he's going to go straight back up again. And this is a guy I like. This is a team I like, because it's one of these, you know, true values, choose the men before the players. It's a small town in Liguria beside Genoa called Chiavari beside Portofino. And it's a really, really nice story. It's a great group. As I say, they've got Y Scout. They've got a sports incubator. Really, really interesting guy. So that's the good way to end the Italian goal of the week.
It's just amazing. That is absolutely amazing. I hadn't seen any of that story. That's
very local.
Well, there you go. There's some clues there for Birmingham City, maybe.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, you don't want to follow the Italian way.
No,
you're not playing anywhere for 4 months. They didn't start their season till November.
Good grief.
But listen, we can't leave without talking a little bit about our friend Phil Nicholson. Do you know what I'm going to talk about?
Ah, yes, yes, yes. I know exactly what you're going to talk about, so bring it.
I just... this idea that, you know, you can get into great universities by being able to pay some fixer or some employee of the athletics department of a major university to say that you're in some way good at a sport that you've got no skills at all as a backdoor way to get into Ivy League. I think that's despicable in itself. You know, I've got my children, especially my son, who this year is doing all of this with the university applications. And I just could never condone that. I prefer that he fails, but he works hard and he sees what he can do himself rather than have daddy pay to get him into universities that he doesn't deserve to get into. I don't think that's the lesson in life. But our friend Phil seems to have a different opinion. And he has employed the services of this company that's now been called out for this fraud. He was one of their clients. It's a little bit like Ashley Madison, you know, the story.
It's exactly like that,
You know, and you know, you just wonder what's coming out now. But for Phil, it's not ideal because he's already tarnished with a couple of, like shady type of things. Was it insider trading or something like that?
Yeah.
You know, like...
Yep. So, gambling, insider trading.
So, like, what is he thinking, Grant? I mean, what's... You're a golf guy. What's he thinking?
Oh, that's nothing to do with golf, is it? I mean, this is the interesting thing about all this stuff, Rog, when you look at it, is that it's parents who are desperate to get their kids into universities, right? The kids, you know, I'm sure, yeah, it'd be great to go to Harvard, but where have they got that from? They got that because their parents have said, you've got to get into an Ivy League school, or got to get into this school, getting into that school. You know what it's like when you're a, whatever, 17, 18 year old kid. You want to go to the school you can have the most fun at, for the most part. So this is all driven by the parents.
Yeah,
I mean, all of it. And it's just parents wanting, on the one hand, you could be magnanimous about it, say they want the best education they can get their kids, and they'll stop at nothing for it, because it's arguably, after sort of parental love, the greatest gift you can give your kids, a fantastic education. But how much of it is status chasing, and how much of it is, you know, I mean, it opens such a can of worms. Of course it goes on. And you can look at whether it's this, which is just overt bribery to get places, or whether it's the acceptable kind of bribery where you buy a new music wing for the school with a bunch of donations. I mean, this is what goes on. I mean, this shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. The only real question for me is now that this has come out, to me, it's a bigger comment on celebrity culture and whether the worm is turning a lot or not, because it has been the case that everybody who's involved in something like this and is a celebrity has kind of skated through for the most part, and the media are complicit in that a little bit with their left-leaning sympathies, let's call it, for the most part. The question is, I get the sense that the public are starting to get a bit cheesed off with it being rigged for quote-unquote the elites, and this is the perfect situation for the debate to be had in public, because this is not a left and right thing. This is just a rich thing. It does involve titans of industry. It does involve titans of Hollywood. So they're all in it. They're all at it. Let's have the conversation. But I have my doubts whether the conversation will take place. If it does, and if public opinion suggests that people really want heads to roll for this, it's going to be interesting to see whether this age of money being able to buy you freedom and buy you largesse from regulators and enforcers is over. If it is, I tell you one thing, Wall Street better watch out.
Yeah, I mean, I know in your day job and in my day job, we've talked about this coming in general. You know, the 1% owns, you know, what percent of the whole wealth of the... We know that whether it's AOC or whether it's socialism or, you know, the Green New Deal, all of this is coming. I think there is a reaction to these elites. I'm just very disappointed in sports people, you know, that set themselves out as some kind of like icon, and you know, I think there's nothing worse than stealing the university place of somebody that's worked hard for it. I think there's nothing worse than that.
No, I don't disagree with that at all, Rog. At all. I think you're 100% right. And sports is is probably the place where they've had to work the hardest, right? Because with the best will in the world, a lot of the guys who get sports scholarships wouldn't get any other kind of scholarship. They're not going to get an academic scholarship. They need those things to be able to get a college education.
Yeah.
And you know, there's another conversation about how much of an education they get when they're playing football full time, but that's not really the point.
No.
And the funny thing is that I'm surprised that guys who've it's unfair of us to single Mickelson out. He just happens to be a high-profile sportsman who's been caught up in it. But taking him as an example, you know, he did great things at Arizona State, and you would think that, you know, without having to pay a bribe, but the things he's done for Arizona State, if his son was a good golfer, maybe he gets a little bit of additional juice, or he's favoured over a guy who's not Phil Mickelson's son, who's also a good golfer. But look, that's the way the world works. Right? It's never going to be the playing field is never going to be level. So you have to accept that there are ways that the system is against you. But this kind of outright money talks thing is just shameful.
It is, and as you say, it's part of a wider picture that is not for this podcast, but very, very real these days. And you know, I think the worm will turn, and probably rightly so. But anyway, great. Listen, we didn't get time to talk about rugby and private equity and everything that we said was coming, and it's now right in front of us.
It's coming thick and fast, yeah.
ATP and, you know, the players against the tournament. And again, listen, I'm telling you, sport is polarizing. It's everywhere you look, it's ripping apart. That's market forces. The players are realizing now that they've got a direct link with the fans, which technology has allowed them. There's nobody in between now, so they can have a direct link to the fans. They're saying, well, it's me that drives this whole damn thing.
Yeah.
And, you know...
No, and to an extent, they're right.
They're right. But, you know, that's not how the governance works. And the rights holders are... Not only are they trying to push back on that, but they're trying to create even more events like rugby is doing now. And you know, these rugby players, their bodies aren't going to be able to deal with all these new tournaments they're throwing around. I just think the whole industry is in a moment where, you know, it's at a shakedown moment, and we just don't know what's going to come out the other end.
Well, the one thing that's great, Rog, is that you and I will be able to record it in live time with these podcasts. So stay tuned.
Absolutely. Stay tuned. Excellent.
All right. Well, look, we've come to the end of another week. We'll be back next time with a special guest. But until then, please do download and review the podcast, rate us, and share us with your friends. Get a few people that you know to listen to us every week. It really helps with the audience getting bigger. Between now and then, you can follow us on Twitter at EntertainedR, the word, A-R-E. And you can follow me at TTMYGH.
And you can follow me at RPM Como, as in the lake.
As in the lake. Rog, always a pleasure. I'll see you next time.
Have a great weekend, mate.
See you, mate. Bye.